May it please the court, Leo Finkelstein, Colorado Springs, number 18455, on behalf of the appellant Peggy Dowling. Ms. Dowling has raised several issues in her appeal to this court, so I'm going to try to briefly touch on each one of them. The first is that the district court, in calculating both child support and maintenance, miscalculated Mr. Dowling's income by $923 per month. This is not insignificant. That's $11,076 per year, more money that would be available to him to pay maintenance to his wife. And the court, even when brought to its attention that it had done that, failed to correct that error. It's clear error. And the court therefore used the wrong income for him on the child support worksheets. She has to pay, it's a double whammy for her. Less money available for maintenance, plus she pays child support, so more money paid for child support. The court did this by taking Mr. Dowling's admitted and acknowledged child income. He's paid every 2 weeks. That means 26 pay periods per year. But instead, the court simply thought he was paid twice per month.
So it's
a 4 week difference in any 1 year.
Is the standard the same for maintenance and child support? I mean, I understand that you look at the guidelines for child support, and if it affects the number, then you clearly have to consider remanding for that possibility. But what about maintenance? Isn't that more of an abuse of discretion standard for the trial court?
Well, child support is definitely clear error. It's a mathematical standard set forth by the legislature, and you're correct that unless there's a statement for reasons to vary from child support. Maintenance, it is an abuse of discretion standard. I agree with that in the general sense. But clearly, when you pointed out to the court that you have made this error, and it's in the testimony, he makes the error, it's in the motion for reconsideration, he ignores it. That's, to me, that's also clear error. That's an abuse of discretion. The standard in the Sin case set by the Supreme Court 25 years ago and followed by this court, cited by this court many times when you have reversed maintenance decisions. It's Sin v. Sin, 696 Pacific 2nd 333. The order produces an unfair and inequitable result. How can you have a fair and equitable result when a party has $923 more per month, which is over $11,000 per year, available to that party, and the court doesn't take it into consideration because of a mathematical error on the court's part? Secondly, with respect to what you raised, Judge Roman, with respect to the maintenance and abuse of discretion, there's also no findings. The court, this is a 25-year marriage. The wife was home for about over 20 years of that, raising four children. The parties had a $500,000 home, four cars, Hawaii timeshare, a very high standard of living, gym memberships, ski passes. The father, the husband, took 7 vacations with his children just in the year of separation leading up to the divorce. So the court didn't give any reasons for why there's a discrepancy in income of $6,286 between what the husband makes and what the wife makes after you consider the maintenance award. It's much higher, $9,200 per month, $9,286 before the maintenance award. The court gave no findings to say why, under these circumstances, you would limit this maintenance award to $1,500 per month, or why you would limit it to 3 years. And you've made clear, it was in your Van Inwagen case, 757P2D1118, you said the decisions in this area must contain sufficient findings to give this court, the appellate court, quote, a clear understanding of the basis of the order and the grounds for the decision. You can read his original decision, you can read his decision upon reconsideration. There is no clear decision as to why he would do this after a 25-year marriage. Now, this wife, there is in the record that she had just obtained a few weeks before the divorce a doctorate degree in psychology. That's acknowledged. But she had not built up a practice. The state regulations, which are in the record, provided that she has to have a year of work under another psychologist to earn at least 1,500 hours, pass 2 licensure exams. So the court doesn't say why he limited it, but if one would say, well, maybe he limited it because she would develop a practice, he figured she might develop a practice. First of all, he doesn't have a finding to that effect. And second of all, it's clear that she has to go through a large hurdle of steps to do that. Without those findings, I think this case clearly would have to be remanded for findings to support the decision, but I would like it remanded for reconsideration in its entirety, given the financial impact of the error on the income. There's one other issue that the Mr. Dowling's attorney raised in their brief. They said, well, she had separate property. She had some inheritance, some other properties in Colorado. And I want this court to be aware of a specific finding that the court made, which was the court found that wife's separate property does not generate any income. So any argument that, gee, she might be able to get some income from separate property is nullified by the court's finding that it does not generate any income. And I think that's very important because it seems to have been ignored in Appellee's brief. There's two other issues because I will save some time. Attorney's fees is also an abuse of discretion standard. When you have a discrepancy in income of more than $9,000 per month between the parties, and even if you were to take into account later on there's going to be some maintenance, so if you reduce it by the maintenance, it says $6,286 difference in income. How can you say that the wife should have supported her own attorney's fees, that there should be no equalization of fees?
Mr. Finkelstein, I seem to recall something in the record regarding income property that was separate property owned by the wife here.
What she had was, yes, go ahead, Judge, I'm sorry.
Well, am I wrong about that? Or
You're correct that she owned some properties in the mountains, but because of the various costs associated with management fees, homeowner fees, the maintenance of those properties, et cetera, the judge took all that into account and on balance had an actual finding that her separate property, and that we're talking about that income from property, exactly what you pointed out, quote, does not generate any income. He's looking at it from the net point of view, from a gross, there'd be some income, there's expenses, et cetera. Basically, the costs offset what you get from the income. And that was a finding he made. So you can't, had he not found that, then maybe you could say, well, gee, he would be assuming that there'd be some extra income there. But he specifically found that. The other thing the judge did in consider is in the income areas, he failed to include the husband's contractual bonus. The husband had a three-year bonus, $80,000. He received the first two installments due September of each year. Third installment was due September of 2009. The contractual bonus was based upon a specific contract. He would receive $26,667. He had received it in 2007. He had received it in 2008. He was still working for that employer. He was under a contractual obligation to receive it.
Did he receive it?
Well, Judge, I can't say that because the trial was held just before September 2009, and we've been given no just post-trial discovery or disclosures to know whether he received it or not. What the court did is the husband testified that he was intending to change jobs the month before the bonus was due, and therefore he did not expect to receive it. He did not think he would receive it. Now, he's a contractor, and so he still works doing the same sort of work, but it's a slightly different employer.
Counsel, if it turns out that he did receive it, couldn't you file a motion for modification of support based on that?
One could, but the appellee takes the position that it's speculation to assume he would receive it, but I take the contrary position to that, which is it's speculation. It was speculation of the judge to assume he would not receive it because he had not accepted a different job. He had not changed employment. He was contractually bound. We knew the amount, and we knew the date of distribution. And it was basically just a couple months after the trial was held that it would be due for distribution. So the burden, one would think, would be on the husband, since the statute, the child support statute, clearly says you have to take into account bonuses. It's scheduled, it's contractual, it had happened the prior two years. So I would say the burden should be on the husband to come back afterwards and say, I didn't receive this bonus. And therefore, he has the knowledge. The wife doesn't have the knowledge. She doesn't know whether he receives it or not. There's no open matters before the court. It could be frivolous. She files a motion, I want to change. He might have gotten his bonus. And then she could be socked with attorney's fees. He has the knowledge. The burden should be put on him to come forth, not on the court to speculate that it would not be given. The last issue, which is also important, is in closing argument, counsel said, and Your Honor, you need to award a portion of the husband's $1.4 million in life insurance, make the wife the beneficiary of a portion of this amount to cover two matters. The maintenance, spousal maintenance has been ordered to be paid to her, and the military retirement has been ordered to be paid for her. The court knew at the time, had the information about the party's income, their assets, their liabilities, the amount of life insurance, and so on. But the court said, well, I didn't hear testimony about that, so I'm not going to award it. So the question becomes, does the wife have to actually say it in her testimony? Or can counsel doesn't know whether maintenance is going to be awarded yet or not. That's up to the court. The court will make that decision. When maintenance is, counsel ought to be able to say in argument, Judge, when you award maintenance, please also award, make wife the beneficiary of a portion of the life insurance to cover that maintenance award in the case husband dies. It's raised before the trial court. I was not able to find cases that talked about whether something should be raised in testimony versus argument, but I did find a Court of Appeals decision, your decision in Minto v. Lambert, 870 Pacific 2nd 572. The party's obligation is to, quote, bring the issue before the trial court to claim error on appeal. And it's clear it was brought to the trial court at the trial by counsel in closing argument. Judge, if you award maintenance, you also need to cover some life insurance, a portion of the life insurance, so that if he dies, the maintenance award will be covered. And counsel specifically also pointed out to the court that it also would cover the portion of military retirement that was included in the wife's pay. If you have questions, I take them. If not, I would reserve the balance of my time.
Thank you, Mr. Finkelstein.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. If it would please the court, Lindsay Ressler, registration number 37015, on behalf of the appellee, John Dowling. There are some significant preliminary issues that I want to cover that in regards to errors within appellant's brief and argument. There has been no finding that wife in this case was a homemaker. You know, in several of the cases, Sin, Beeson, there is a clear finding that this wife or mother is a homemaker. The court made no such finding. The only evidence to support that is wife's own testimony. Husband didn't testify that she was primarily a homemaker. Wife testified that she was primarily a homemaker. Secondly, there's no mention of the income that should be derived from these separate properties. There's no mention of that income in appellant's brief. There's $454,000 of separate properties owned free and clear, three condos in Mountain Properties, owned free and clear. And there's no mention of any of that investment generating any income. Now, the court did make a finding that, yeah, it's not generating any income at the time because wife wasn't properly managing them. But the court didn't say these properties are never going to generate income. That would be ridiculous. At some point, these properties, she's got to make something out of these properties. And there's no mention that of that in appellant's brief. A majority part of wife's argument is there's this huge disparity in incomes. Well, if she was earning anything off that $450,000, that disparity of income wouldn't be what he claims it is.
Ms. Ressler, the omission of the total number of pay periods, would you consider that to be de minimis for purposes of calculating child support?
Yes, Your Honor. Not for child support, the remedy is file a motion for modification of child support. And you plug in the numbers and it is what it is. It's not a de minimis error with regard to child support. But wife is the obligee, the obligor on the child support. And if she wants to change that, then she's certainly able to go to the courts and file a motion for modification. But, you know, I would also consider it de minimis in that they're calculating it different, not incorrectly, just different. My client doubled his monthly, he gets paid twice a month. He doubled that income. And because he didn't add up the number of weeks and divide that by the number of months, it yields a different number. But for purposes of maintenance, it certainly has to rise to the level of abuse of discretion. Let's see. Now, there's no evidence in the trial court's order that the three-year maintenance award was in any way tied to her private practice. Appellant makes the argument that the trial court judge somehow made a finding that it would take her 3 years to build up her practice, but you know, no such finding was made. So we don't know where the three-year period duration came from, but it's certainly within the trial court's discretion to come up with a number. Additionally, there's no mention of the marital debt. I noticed in the preliminary comments by Mr. Finkelstein, he mentioned that this was a household with vacations, Hawaiian timeshares, cars. There's no mention that there's $32,000 in credit card debt, a second mortgage, which is a home equity line of credit, $43,000. Significant vehicle debt. They may have had a lot of cars, but they have $29,000 on them. There's no significant savings, no certificates of deposit, no liquid funds. The Hawaiian timeshare, I don't know if anyone, you know, owns a timeshare. It's not equity. It's certainly a liability. The seven vacations, to be honest, this isn't the court to determine how many vacations they took, but next issue, that also goes to the standard of living, which is one of the factors in 1410.114. The court did make a finding that there was a rather high standard of living, but there was also all of this debt. They may have been living a high, you know, an expensive lifestyle, but at the expense of a whole lot of debt. Let's see. Overall, the parties had a full day for hearing, final orders hearing. The court issued a ruling after 3 days of consideration. There was no rash decision making here. The final orders hearing was on the 16th of June, issued the rule on the 18th. Wife filed a motion for reconsideration, mentioning the alleged error in the pay stubs, and the court considered it, must have, if the motion was filed, and the court issued then a lengthy amended final order, 3 pages, and it's the appellant's argument that the findings were not specific enough. Yet, when the findings benefit his client, such as the finding that there was the respondent owned separate property that does not generate any net income, appellant says that there was a finding because it benefits his side. But we're looking at 3 pages of an order, and there's no case law out there that says it's got it. The findings have to be of a certain length. The court specifically stated it went through each of the factors, relevant factors in 1410.114. It then even went into further discussion about those factors. The financial first factor, subsection A, is the financial needs of the payee. As brought up in appellant's argument, she obtained her master's in 1990 during the marriage, obtained her PhD prior to the dissolution of the marriage. No evidence that she was primarily a homemaker other than her testimony. The time needed to, subsection B, the time needed to obtain an education, we just went through that, standard of living. In fact, the wife's testimony on the record, she said that she was under a type of food budget and there were strict rules with regard to budgeting and lifestyle. The length of the marriage is the only factor, one of six, that benefits her. It was a 25-year marriage. An appellant equates this case to Sin v. Sin, where it was a similar marriage, 25 years. However, in Sin v. Sin, the wife was, again, the primary homemaker for the majority of the marriage. But the distinguishing factors relate to subsection E of 1410.114. And the wife in that case, Sin, in the Sin matter, was recuperating from heart surgery. She lacked marketable skills, didn't know when she would obtain a job, that type of thing. Additionally, the work that, going to that factor, subsection E, the work that wife in this case is employed in it is the exact work that she has trained for and that she has been educated for. You know, 1410.114.3, there are those two factors that the court has to get through to in order to award maintenance at the beginning, one of which is appropriate employment. Now, it's very, you know, important to say here, or it's important to point out that wife is employed as a psychologist, in which she has her psychology degree, PhD, and master's degree. So it's certainly appropriate employment. The court also addressed the ability of the payor spouse in its findings, and that's the ability of husband in this case to pay. And the court made a specific finding that he was able to pay. Appellant also cites the case Wagner, the Wagner case. In this case, the trial court only awarded maintenance for 3 years, similar to the case at hand. But in that case also, the wife was blind, had back problems, lacked marketable skills, didn't know when she would be able to obtain an employment, appropriate employment. And in that case, there was no, the court really took into account the maintenance and the property division. In Reed Jones, the court says that you have to consider, the Colorado Supreme Court says that you have to consider property division when you're deciding maintenance. You don't just go with what the parties are making monthly. You have to just see what was divided in dissolution with regard to property. In this case, wife not only has that $454,000 separate property owned free and clear, husband also had to pay her $120,000 equalization payment. Now, because they didn't have any liquid funds for that, you couldn't get that out of a savings account, husband had to withdraw $68,000 from, well, he had $160,000 in home equity. He refinanced and was left with $92,000 in equity. Then he had to take out approximately $50,000 from his IRAs and retirement accounts, and he was only left with $130,000. So on those two, on the refinance and the withdrawal from retirement accounts, husband not only had to pay those, and now his retirement is less and his home equity is less, but he's got to pay interest on that refinance, and he's got to pay the penalty and interest on the withdrawal from the IRA account and the 401ks. So that hinders his ability to pay. Appellant also cites the Huff case. In that case, it was also an unskilled wife now entering the workforce, whereas wife here in this case already has two jobs. She's a school psychologist and is just building up her private practice. She testified that she earns about $500 a month in her private practice. Now, the trial court, told her when she filed her motion for reconsideration, said, I agree that amount should not be put in for child support purposes, that private practice income. But the court said, that money is still available to you, so I'm going to consider it with maintenance, when deciding maintenance.
Can I ask you about the attorney's fees?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That discussion. As you know, the attorney's fee statute in this area provides that after considering the financial resources of both parties, the court may order a party to pay a reasonable amount for attorney's fees incurred by the other party.
Mm-hmm.
Now, my understanding is that husband was making about $9,000 a month more than wife. Is that correct?
Well, it's a mischaracterization. Husband is making $11,000 from work. He gets $2,600 before taxes from his military retirement. Then that is a total of about $13,700. Now he's got to pay $1,500 in maintenance, so that his figure down is $12,000 per month. So we're looking at about $12,000. We look at wife's income, $3,400 from work, $500 private practice, $1,500 in maintenance, and $1,961 in retirement funds from husband's military retirement.
That's the net. What's the net?
I don't know her net. Her gross is $8,361.
What I'm asking is, from a net standpoint, how much more does husband make than wife?
Well, it's difficult to say because she's saying I don't get any income from these separate properties. When in the past, on the record, she testified one of those properties earned between $7,000 and $11,000 historically per year. Another one of those properties earned between $500 and $600 a month. Another one, the third property, yielded about $600 per month. So, you know, she's starting at about $8,000, and that's without any income that she should be earning on a $450,000 investment. So, you know, assuming add another $2,000, we're looking at, you know, the difference of her $10,000 and his $12,000. That's not a huge disparity in income.
Do you believe it's about $2,000 per month?
About, she should be earning at least $2,000 a month from these separate properties, at least. So you're looking at about $10,300 that she should be earning, and he has about $12,254. So that's not a huge disparity in income. When she's also got, you know, attorney's fees, in Ree Wiebel's, that case, even though there was a disparity in income, and I'm not saying there is in this case because I don't believe there is one, but in that case, in Ree Wiebel's, the court said even though there is a disparity in income, the wife had considerable assets. So we're looking at, you know, from the Andrews case, putting the parties on equal footing. She certainly has the money to pay her attorney's fees. She's got $120,000 liquid funds, $454,000 free and clear, and he's got everything tied up in his house or IRA that he had to pay penalties and interest on, and now she's wanting attorney's fees. So, you know, the lower court's got broad discretion with regard to attorney's fees, and this is a three-page order that clearly, you know, there were specific findings. I probably have some more. Oh, husband's bonus. The courts in the Watson case and the Sim case, the court said the court is not going to speculate as to what the income will be. He testified, I am not going to remain with this job. I will not receive that bonus. The lower court's in the best position to assess his credibility. Court believed him, and the court made a specific finding. I am not going to speculate this at that time, whether or not he's going to receive this bonus.
As I asked him earlier today, we wouldn't be speculating on whether he got the bonus.
If she filed a motion for modification, or if I had that information now. Correct, yeah. So she would, you know, she's got the remedy of filing a modification, and the Huff case and several other cases cite or tell the parties that's a remedy here. You know, if you've got ifs out there, you don't have to reserve jurisdiction. It you know, judicial economy doesn't provide for that. That's all I got.
Thank you, Ms. Ressler. Mr. Finkelstein? You have 3 minutes and 12 seconds.
Thank you, Your Honor. It's the wife's contention that the court failed to give adequate consideration to the disparity in the party's income, both with respect to the maintenance and with respect to the attorney's fees. I'm going to answer Judge Roman's question directly, because the numbers are very simple. The husband makes $11,965 per month plus $2,642 in his military retirement. That's $14,677 per month. If you include the $500 in the little bit that the wife was trying to earn from her separate psychology, she's trying to develop it, she made $3,930 per month plus $1,961 in military retirement for $5,891. The difference, if you attribute the $500 to wife, is $8,786 per month, period. There's no fuzzy numbers here. It would be different if in fact the wife generated income from her separate properties, but she was able to show at trial that that wasn't the case, and that's the one finding the judge actually made. The problem with the arguments about there's no finding that she was a homemaker, that goes directly to the fact that there were no findings to support why he would, given the evidence, go down to $1,500 a month for 3 years. He didn't go through the statutory criteria one by one. He gave lip service. I've considered the factors in the statute, and here's my ruling, and gives you the answer. Where's the actual analysis, factor by factor, of disparity in the party's income, duration of the party's marriage, the party's standard of living, his ability to pay, her needs, etc.? That's the problem. The concept that, you could file a motion to modify because he made an error really doesn't apply. He found a certain income based upon the circumstances then. You move to modify, the husband says, my income hasn't changed since then. You don't have the grounds for modification. There's no substantial continuing change. The court found that you were earning so much, and therefore that's what it is, and that's what his salary is. There's no change. And again, I think it's improper to put the burden on the wife to show that the husband receives a bonus when she doesn't know if the husband receives a bonus. The court imposed no duty to disclose. It is true, however, that when you remand, and you remand so that he makes findings and so that he, you can give him direction to determine whether or not the bonus is paid in considering the errors in income. There is no reason why you can't do that. We will know whether he received the bonus in September 2009 or not. That's something you can put into your remand. When the court also considers the husband's income, because you're going to remand for reconsideration of the husband's income given the error. And the error is not insignificant. When you talk $923 per month, which is, like I said, $11,076 per year, that's money available to the husband to pay to wife. It goes into the equation under disparity of parties' income, and as Judge Roman pointed out, it's also clear error in the child support worksheets. So I ask you to please remand this case for specific findings, direct the court to correctly calculate the husband's income, look into the bonus as well.
Thank you, Mr. Finkelstein.
Thank you.
Thank you again, Ms. Ressler. The matter is deemed submitted, and you can expect a written opinion to issue in due course.